Welcome to the Chirpin' Birds podcast. The Eagles suffer a horrendous loss to the New York Jets, 20-14. We'll get into that. We'll preview the upcoming Sunday night game against the Miami Dolphins, the Kelly Green jersey reveal. Higher pressure game now with this loss. Phillies up 2-1 on Arizona in the NLCS. Sixers preseason, Flyers winning.
James Harden now reporting to practice.
Yep. We're a variety show, Philly sports variety show today. Before we get started, Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing okay.
Yep.
You mentioned Philly's being up 2-1. We're like a few hours removed from the first loss of the series, which is always a little bit of a bummer. It is in theme with the Eagles this past week losing their first game of the season, which was also a bummer. But I think big picture, both losses, I think there's stuff you can take away from it and learn from it, bounce back from it. So hopefully we can talk about that. And I'm sure the Eagles have been talking about that stuff all week.
Yeah, they're both the Phillies loss today and the Eagles loss are those like annoying losses where they definitely could have won. And now we're in this like holding period of anxiety of, does this loss mean anything? Am I supposed to like worry now? Or is this just like a bump in the road and they're fine? Stuff just happens sometimes. So it's hard to know how to feel about the Jets loss. Stating the obvious, they play the 5-1 Dolphins on Sunday night. They have Washington on the road and then Dallas at home before the bye and then the gauntlet of the schedule. Not an ideal place to lose, especially when San Francisco loses in embarrassing fashion to the Browns, and not just the Browns, but the PJ Walker, Temple Browns. I wouldn't say Temple Browns, but PJ Walker. You were up two games on the Cowboys. The Cowboys beat the Chargers. Now you're one game again, which makes that Cowboys game potentially more significant as far as head-to-head with the Cowboys. Now mutual opponent. The Cowboys beat the Jets. So that's not, if it comes down to that kind of tiebreaker.
That is not an early tiebreaker, though, since it's an AFC team.
It's a common opponent.
Yeah, but
if
that's the is that even a secondary?
No, it's probably tertiary. It's probably
I'm not sweating that.
It's probably division, then conference, common
opponent.
We're
gonna have more common opponents.
I'm just saying, like, you talk about this stuff when you're gunning for the Super Bowl and there's the one seed on the line. It's just frustrating where they had a game where they could have won or should have won, and they had an opportunity to go up on the Niners and the Cowboys, and the Lions win again. They are 5-1 as well. So there's a lot of 5-1 NFC teams that are all fighting for that top spot. And it's just frustrating. I think, the schedule's not going to pan out exactly how you predict, and it's a game they should have won. But if they come out and beat the Dolphins, then you're kind of like, okay, I'll take that, because Dolphins are a tough team, and you can trade a should have won to a could lose, and you're 1-1 anyways. So it's a wait and see type loss, in my opinion. But that's a loss, and you have your gauntlet coming up soon. So when you're looking at trying to get back to 13 wins, which could be the difference of the one seed or the five seed, this is a game that you're going to look back on. And that's frustrating, especially for a team that has, you know, expectation, aspiration, whatever you want to say, to get the one seed. So it's a bad loss. A lot of questionable decisions. And I guess let's get into it.
Yeah. I don't know if you felt this way, but this game felt eerily similar to last year's loss to the Commanders. And I think the biggest reason that's what comes to mind for me, at least, was the turnovers. It felt like a game where if they could even take one or two of those off the table, which I know sounds pretty wild because it's not like just they're a small thing, but like that had such an effect on the game. Note, there's some crazy record of teams out there who are -4. Like the win loss is as you would expect, and it was just an insurmountable hole that the Eagles couldn't get out of. Now the Jets didn't capitalize on all of those. Like I think it was just the late turnovers, notably the interception that really unplugged the power on the Eagles there. And it's going up against a quarterback that was not high quality. So with the Commanders, Heinicke, with the Jets, Zach Wilson. So both QBs were able to do enough. The Eagles weren't able to, avoid defeat. But that's what came to mind to me. And we can dive into it a little bit deeper than that.
Yeah, the Commanders game from last year, I felt like they were being outplayed to some extent with the clock management and the run game. I felt the defense in this game did well. Like they held them to 13 points or 12. The 12 points. They held them to 4 field goals before that touchdown, right?
Right.
Then they had the 2-point conversion to make it to 20. So the defense, I thought, played well enough to win, and it was more on the offense struggling and turnovers, and you know, Jalen had a couple bad ones. DeAndre Swift had the fumble, Dallas Goedert, which I didn't realize at the time, like it was more his fault than Jalen. My stream was weird.
Yeah, I don't know why that's classified as an interception.
Because it, like, I was surprised it was an interception. Like, it took forever to, it was like bouncing in the air. I don't know exactly what it.
Yeah, it's not like it was tipped. Like, if it was a tipped ball that was like effectively a drop, I could understand it being an interception, but it looked like a catch and like a forced fumble. I don't think there was like a great camera angle, but I agree. It was like a funky play. Yeah. I don't put that one on Jalen. You mentioned the Swift one that, like, you know, he knows he's got to be.
You could tell later in the game he was like holding onto the ball a lot harder. And,
yeah. I still trust him. It's just like,
yeah.
Bad time for that to happen. And then the other one, like, I don't know how much you put on Jalen with the one where he had his arm hit and that.
That was just unfortunate. But I mean, the other big note of the game was Lane Johnson exiting the game with the ankle injury, and Driscoll had a bad game, and he's been pretty solid as a swing guy, can slot in there at any position, really. And he was disappointing. You have Opeta in there, so the whole right side of the line was your depth guys. So that's tough when you have a strong D line that you're playing against. And it showed that Jalen was under pressure a lot. It was the first time I really noticed Jalen was more hesitant or more frantic or whatever you want to say. Like, he was feeling the pressure really, really quick, and was scrambling a lot. There were a lot of like breakdowns in the play and throwing it away, and he was sacked a number of times. The Johnson injury really affected his play, and against the good defense, probably one of the first really good defenses. I mean, the Patriots were played really well week one, and the Eagles didn't look too good there. But I don't know. It's something to figure out. Like, Jalen and Nick aren't good against defenses that pressure, that bring pressure.
And it, like, we found out, I think it was Saturday, that Sauce Gardner was in the concussion protocol.
Right.
So they were down their top two cornerbacks, and for them to not really capitalize on that with an effective, reliable passing game was disappointing, to say the least. Now, AJ Brown still had a good day. That didn't stop him from getting his. Devontae Smith had some really ill-timed drops. One really big where it seemed like anybody was within 10 yards of him.
That's another thing. Like, that was so uncharacteristic. You lose Lane Johnson. Like, all these weird things happened on top of the turnovers.
Like, it doesn't feel like this is a repeatable outcome.
A lot of things have to go wrong.
Right. And that's
but the Jets aren't the best. They're like in a middle of the pack team. So, what would you say?
Well, I guess I said that too early because you said team. And I guess like it probably averages out.
They are a team.
I know.
What else are they?
Well, I mean, we were talking about our Eagles offense versus their defense. So I didn't know where that sentence is going to end. I do think, I'm not saying you're doing this, but it was a really good defense. They were getting really good pressure. I think there would have been pressure even with Lane Johnson. So you take him out for pretty much the whole game. I think he got injured on like the first or second series. So it's pretty much a start effectively for Driscoll, all but on paper. And I mean, the Jets, they were getting pressure. They were, and I agree, like Hurts did look a little unnerved. And I'm sure a lot of that is because he doesn't have his star right tackle there to protect him. So I do think like people are being a little tough on Driscoll. I know he let up a lot of pressures. I do think he let that Jermaine Johnson arm swatted interception. Like, I do think he was responsible for that, although you can make the argument that like Hurts, that's not coming out of like Hurts's peripheral, that's like developing in front of him, and maybe he has to have a better sense of to scoot in the pocket or to get out of there. But you know, it was just kind of like a perfect storm of misfortune and errors and blunders. Like, we talk about the Devontae Smith drop, the Swift fumble. There wasn't too much to feel good about on offense. Now, the good news is it sounds like Lane Johnson will be ready for this week. And that took a positive turn. I think we got that news somewhat early in the week, so he's already practicing in a limited capacity. So I expect
it was a grade one. That was after the game, that was the diagnosis. So the lowest grade possible. I think Embiid had a grade two knee sprain, and that was like a 2 to 3 week recovery. So
the other good thing is it's not the ankle that has been bothering him for years, even though he's since gotten that cleaned up. It is the other ankle. Because if that wasn't the case, I don't know what the Eagles would have been. I don't know what their plan would have been. Like, because I think you'd probably go give Driscoll another chance against a defense that isn't as fierce in the Dolphins.
Is Jason Peters available?
You do
Move
have
slide Mailata over to the right side.
I do think it's a little different when you are prepared a week of practice, knowing you're the starter, similar to a Peta against the Rams. And then there's like Tyler Steen talk. Do you flip him to left tackle because that's what he played at Alabama? And then do you move Mailata over? Or is it Fred Johnson?
So
I'm glad most likely we won't have to find out that. And
it's that turf.
I mean, I feel bad for the Giants and Jets. They have to play on that for half the season. So
the Eagles have to go back there and play on it
again. I
don't
know how you can get through a full season on that garbage field. But defense, let's talk a little bit on that. They had a good day. Their only touchdown they gave up was after the interception on a really short field. I don't think that's any fault of their side. Reddick had a good day, 2.5 sacks. Nice to see him turn it on. Looks like he's returning to the Reddick of last year. Josh Sweat looked good. They held Breece Hall to under 40 yards. So their run defense looks really good. Now, they didn't have Jalen Carter. We get him back this week, it looks like. He and Darius Slay look like they're going to be ready for this week. So it's nice. There are some returning contributors, some big ones at that. And nonetheless, there are some guys who won't be available for this week or are still banged up. Notably, Reed Blankenship. He got hit on that blindside block for the second time this season. He's dealing with a ribs injury, his poor ribs. I don't know if they even had time to fully heal before they're injured once again. Bradley Roby, their nickel cornerback solution, is now a question mark again. So those are the two big ones for this upcoming week. I don't know what they do there. But speaking of safety, it looks like Sidney Brown will be making his return. So who knows? He might be starting now. Welcome, Sidney Brown. You get the Dolphins.
I just think the safety position's a total, like, lost cause right now. Like, they'll just put whoever out there. I don't know how. I can't think off the top of my head how many like veteran safeties are available to just sign, like a Linval Joseph type, like just veteran minimum safety. But
give me Ndamukong Suh, but safety.
Yeah. So,
Real quick on the safety, did you see that Jeremy Chinn is now injured?
No.
He's going to be out for like, I think it was something like 4 to 6 weeks. And I saw somebody that's like, man, even like our theoretical safeties get injured.
So. Yeah. So they can't make, Buda Baker.
Tough beat for safeties associated with the Eagles.
As far as special teams and other fluky element of the game, is Jake Elliott missed a 37-yard field goal, which kind of really was deflating. They would have went up 17-12. It would have been a touchdown difference. You know, that could have changed the course of that, the last 2 minutes. Obviously, they let them score to get the ball back with more time and 2 timeouts. But, there's some back and forth. I wasn't too upset that they let them score. Like, I kind of was.
I was surprised they took the invitation because, like, they could have ran.
Yeah, that was the, like, broadcasters were dismayed from by that. They're like, you gotta.
That's not even like the analytically sound thinking. Like, I think our reaction is not the better one, even though it is like our natural one, which I think is.
Letting them score is
the analytical, becoming more popularly understood. I didn't get into why it's wrong. I was like, weird. I thought I was doing the analytically thoughtful thing.
by wanting them to score, let them score.
Yeah.
I mean, it's tough to go down the field when you have to and score, but that's why you pay Jalen Hurts what you're paying him. And
right.
There aren't that, like the Cowboys Chargers game. And oftentimes when this happens with the Cowboys, like they always flash the stat of Dak in fourth quarter overtime, like game winning drive situations. And he's made, you know, a number of them. And Jalen, to his credit, hasn't had to make that many because of big leads and how good the team did last year. But that's another opportunity where, you know, they went 3 and out, I think, 4 and out.
Yeah, they even got a first down.
Yeah, the stream kind of like cut out on fourth down, but I just kind of like turned the game off after that because I saw that they turned it over. So,
what did you think about the decision making? So, leading up to the awful interception, what did you think about the decision making of going run, pass? I know you're trying to get the Jets to use their timeouts, but like, what? I guess, were you in agreement? Were you hoping they would do something different and like try to frame it as, and you don't know how it ends up going. Like in the moment, what were you feeling and thinking?
Well, I was caught up in the emotion of like, you just need a first down to win the game. Yeah. So when they went to pass it, I was like, all right, they gotta do it. Like it was 3rd and 9. Nick said the worst thing that could happen happened. And that's just how it goes sometimes. Yeah. But I was happy that they were going to pass in the moment, but then later on, I'm thinking like, it would have made way more sense to run it. And if you didn't get it, you would still shave off like 40 seconds and punt. And then Zach Wilson would have to go like 80 plus yards in 60 seconds to score. Or maybe not 80 plus yards. I think they could have kicked a field goal because it was 14-12.
Yeah, that was the tricky part. I think
because it was field goal range.
I don't think it's a question because then you're like, all right,
yeah that's true. Yeah, it's a 2-point. He didn't have to go that far.
I feel like it would have been pretty
with no timeouts. I don't know. The question of trusting your defense is like so complicated because you can say, oh, we'll trust our defense, and if our guys make plays, we'll win, and if not, whatever. But a lot of times, I feel like being in control of a game, you control the game with your offense, and if that means you don't give your defense a chance to trust them to lock a game down, then so be it. So, I don't know what the analytics are, but to not trust your defense, to have like a risky throw, you know, not run the ball there. I don't know. It felt like it was a pure emotional decision to try to throw for the first down. And, you know, earlier in the game, they went for it on fourth down, didn't make it.
I don't get why they didn't try to. So, like, I'm fine with running the ball on first down just to see if you can get it, like, 4 or 5 yards, get yourself in a good spot so you can, like, be set up for that, you know, game-ending first down. I don't get doing that again. Because, like, they're anticipating the run. It's the likely thing. I don't get why you wouldn't try to set up, like, a high percentage short pass play. And I know, like, the other side of that is, well, if it's incomplete, it stops the clock. But, like, there's got to be, like, an A.J. Brown quick quick yeah, out I mean, or like, slant or like Devontae Smith.
They
like,
always give up that slant to like Cooper Kupp to you know, whoever.
That happens to the Eagles like 12 times a game.
Yeah.
It would be like third and they can't get it once.
Even some of the plays to like Devontae Smith or AJ get swatted.
Yeah.
You know, like I don't know why it's so hard for the Eagles, but maybe the Eagles play that soft shell off coverage more often than other defenses. That would be an interesting thing to compare. But I don't know. It was a frustrating game, and I don't know. They have to come out and play well against the Dolphins, because if they lose again, and you know, that Dallas game before the bye would be for first place, most likely. So it's a tough situation to be in.
Yeah. And first loss in franchise history to the Jets, no less.
Yeah, an unlucky 13. They were 12-0. All right, let's move on to the news of the week and put this Jets game behind us. Julio Jones. You want to try it again?
We'll redo that.
let's get into the news of the week. Julio Jones is an Eagle, number 80. What were your initial thoughts?
My initial thoughts were like amused, but in a very mild capacity, because like, I think my knee-jerk reaction is like, oh man, Julio Jones. But then I also know like Julio Jones hasn't really been Julio Jones for like years.
Yeah, but he's a wide receiver 3.
Well, we'll see about that. I think he might be more of like a, like they're in the red zone.
Well, they need that. They've been bad in the red zone.
I think he'll still contribute in some fashion, but I'm not expecting him to be seeing serious snaps. Are you? Like, you think he will be?
I mean, does Quez Watkins see serious snaps? Does Zacchaeus see serious snaps?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, they're not starters if you're going by like the paper, but they do run a good amount of 11 personnel. So let's say,
I guess it's hard to visualize that. Let's
jump to week 12.
Okay.
Quez Watkins is back. He still has Zacchaeus. Who's getting the third most snaps at wide receiver?
Julio Jones.
Really? Okay.
I hope so.
I'm not sure if that's something you want to hope for. I am hoping that Quez Watkins can be.
He's bad.
He has been bad. I think there's still.
How long does he have to be bad for before you realize he's bad?
Are we talking with or without the hamstring?
Well, with, because if he doesn't have the hamstring, then he probably won't be running too much.
I think a healthy Quez Watkins can still add something to this offense. And I'm not saying that Julio can't. I think it's cool. It's interesting. Well, it's fun.
He was healthy in the Super Bowl.
Yeah. I'm not saying he's a guy that does a lot for this team, but he does stretch the field.
When the Cowboys had their really good offense like 2 years ago, it was like Amari Cooper, CeeDee Lamb, and Michael Gallup. And Michael Gallup was like a 1,000-yard receiver. I'm not saying like Julio Jones or Quez Watkins or whoever has to catch for the ball for 1,000 yards, but like a third receiver that's actually impactful would be nice.
Did you see what he did with the Titans?
Julio Jones?
Yeah.
But he
what do you think he's going, like, for the rest of the season, how many yards total are you expecting? Because I think we might
like 300, 400.
Okay.
That would be nice. Okay. I'm saying a third wide receiver, like a Jason Avant. Like a solid third guy.
I mean, you got to get yourself a Julio Jones jersey at this point.
Number 80 looks pretty good, actually. James Thrash, former Eagle. I mean,
this
Jerry Rice.
Sound like I don't like Julio. I think it's fun. I think it's cool.
When you say Julio Jones hasn't been Julio, it's like, of course he hasn't been Julio Jones. They didn't sign him to be AJ Brown.
I know,
to be a wide receiver one.
I know, we know that. I don't think the whole Eagles community is that tuned into what the career trajectory of Julio Jones has been. Like Sixers.
Okay.
He's closer to Danny Green than he is like
Danny Green is a very useful, helpful player.
And I'm not saying Julio Jones can't be, but like I'm not expecting too much.
Like Zacchaeus was targeted a couple times the last couple games and the passes are broken up. He's had one good game or like two good catches all year and they were both against like the Vikings.
Yeah.
Like Julio Jones, I think a solid third option that could have like four catches a game and get you a couple first downs. And he's a big body for the red zone. Like,
yeah, sign me up for all of that.
I know. So we have the same expectation. We're just coming to it from a different angle.
I think you're optimistic and I'm not pessimistic, but like, you're guarded.
You're very guarded. Like, whatever. All right. They signed Julio Jones and we buried the lead.
All I'm saying is he could be the offensive version of Robert Quinn. And I know that we traded for him. So there was like value put into that. And this is effectively
He was like leading the league in sacks at the time or something like that. Like,
no, it was
there was
the
real
year,
expectation.
It was the year prior.
The year before. Okay.
Because the next season, he only had like one sack.
Yeah.
After like
he was
18.
Horrible. He was horrible.
But yeah, I'm excited to see Julio. I think he's a bigger name than he will be. Like impact or role, which is fine. I'm assuming he's fully aware of like his assignment coming in on the team. I did think it was kind of
if this was like 2020 with Carson Wentz receivers and they signed Julio Jones, then I'd be talking myself into like he's gonna be our AJ Brown, Devontae
he's
Smith.
He's our
type.
Guy.
Yeah. But I'm not there yet.
I do two things real quick on Julio. I do like how he and AJ were teammates. I'm assuming that
AJ called him big bro.
Those two would only rejoin if like that was a big element. And obviously AJ is a big leader on the team. So I think he did have a hand in making this happen. That's at least my theory. And also I do think like there was always concerns about like the third guy can't be a good third guy because the guys in front of him are already like a bit like publicly interpretedly defensive over the amount of snaps they're already getting. So that third guy has to be somewhat selfless. And I think at this point in the career, Julio Jones is that type of guy, like a savvy vet who the other two guys probably look up to. And you could probably throw Jalen Hurts into that camp too. So I do think there's like a nice balance of like role and also respect that maybe there's more built-in trust of Hurts going to him rather than Quez Watkins or Zacchaeus in a certain point in the game where he might think otherwise. So overall, I think it's cool. I think it could be helpful.
Thank you. All right, burying the lead here, though, with all this Julio Jones talk, the Eagles signed and returning Josiah Scott.
That's right.
And in doing so, they released Mario Goodrich. So Bradley Roby was hurt last game. It's week to week with a shoulder injury. So Josiah Scott is a potential, you know, nickel corner starter at this point. So yeah. We'll see how that shakes out with the game.
It's that nickel corner spot's quickly turning into the defense against the dark arts position.
Yep.
So exactly. We have Avante Maddox. He goes down, obviously the starter, but before he goes down, Zach McPherson goes down. Third, I guess, was Roby, or would you say it was James Bradberry?
I
know he's still in the team, but they tried him out.
They
and
for
Roby
for bragging about cross training their guys, it sounds like the way that they're like, yeah, well, of course we cross train our guys, like it sounded like they cross train them like maybe a couple reps at different positions, and they're like, okay, I could put that on my resume, like I did it a couple times.
He got the certificate.
Yeah.
I don't think the James Bradbury in the slot tactic is gone. I think that was always thought of as like a tool that could be used in certain situations. So like theoretically, if they play, it's not even theoretical because they're playing the Chiefs in the regular season, like they could try him on Travis Kelce. So it's like big slot. I don't think
not the way Nicholas Morrow's playing.
I don't think they would ever put him on a tight end. He's too slow.
He's been playing well.
Yeah, he is racking up some of the stats, but like I think we could see that in small doses. It was never supposed to be like James Bradbury, our full-time slot cornerback.
Yeah.
But yeah, Josiah Scott, good luck. Tough week ahead.
Yep, and speaking of the tough week ahead, the Miami Dolphins come to town on Sunday Night Football. Kelly Green at home. The hype for the Kelly Green is like finally here, and with the Phillies playoffs coming off this Jets loss and like all the James Harden drama, I feel like it's the most like lackluster excitement moment for the Kelly Green to return. But I'm sure like Sunday at, you know, an hour before the game, it's going to be, oh, it's a Kelly Green. So I like what the Eagles social media has been doing. You know, they're really paying homage to that era.
Yeah, we got the injury reports and the Kelly Green. Nice yeah. Touch.
So the Dolphins come to town. They're 5-1. They have the number one offense in the league. Is that that's overall, and passing, specifically passing. They have the best wide receiver duo in the league with Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle. Eagles are, you know, close, but
see, I'm not sure. I think they certainly have the best wide receiver in the league. Waddle's been hurt. I don't know. So like, I think the top three are pretty clear.
They also have my guy Braxton Berrios and Robbie Chosen. So yeah. That's pretty good. River Craycraft.
Craycraft.
That's your guy. Craycraft.
How would you order the duos between the Eagles, the Dolphins, and the Bengals? Do you think there's like a clear order? Or do you think like they're so good and there's no clear delineation?
It's tough because I don't watch that much Dolphins and Bengals. Obviously, I watch a lot of Eagles, but if those duos were on, you know, an NFC team, then maybe I'd pay attention a little more.
AJ and Devontae for either of them? I think I'd probably take Waddle and Hill.
Yeah, it's tough because I think combined they're like more valuable than what improvement you'd get from Chase over AJ or Hill over AJ. But I feel like Devontae is just as good, if not better, as all the second ones.
Yeah, I mean, I guess like,
so on average, I think the Eagles.
I think they're all like,
yeah,
it's a tight pack. And I do think like the clear and obvious thing is that Tyreek Hill is the most talented. Then it's probably AJ Brown. But it could also be Ja'Marr Chase if like with a fully healthy Joe Burrow. Yeah, it's tricky. Like, I think all the ones and all the twos are like pretty similar.
Either way, the receivers will probably have a field day with the Eagles secondary, and that's going to be difficult. Tua,
they do get Darius Slay back.
They do, yeah.
Which is very important. I do think he has the ability to kind of stifle these star receivers. I know it doesn't happen all the time, but he does a pretty good job of keeping his assignment in check if they do travel. And I think it would make sense to have him cover Tyreek Hill in the situations where he can.
Yeah, I mean, coming off a knee issue, being, I don't know how old Tyreek Hill is, but, you know, Darius Slay, obviously, on the other side of 30. I can imagine, I can see him, like, containing Hill a bit, but playing more off coverage and conceding, you know, catches for to make tackles and mitigate gains. I think it's going to be a frustrating day either way from the secondary, and the Eagles offense is going to have to score points to keep up. You know, Tua's has not been injured this year and is playing very well. He gets the ball out quickly. He can run a bit. You know, he's one of the best quarterbacks in the league. He's like a top he's a top 10, you know, top 12 guy. And I know, you know, we kind of say that about Goff and Cousins and stuff. I think he's above those guys.
And most importantly, he's a lefty.
He's a lefty.
And we know how lefty quarterbacks look when they throw the ball.
Not as good as righties. But still pretty good when you're throwing to the guys that he's throwing to.
I do think the highlights look like more impressive just because like it looks backwards.
Yeah.
Like the Michael Vick.
Like, yeah.
Wow, look at him throw with his offhand.
Raheem Mostert's their lead back.
Former Eagle. Right?
Really?
I might be getting confused with Jeff Wilson. One of those two was a former Eagle.
Maybe Mostert was, but
I'll look it up and confirm.
Sure. You know, they have a decent run game too. Devon Achane? How do you say his name? Achane? Yeah. He's injured on IR. Jeff Wilson returned from IR. There are speedy backs that you know, they'll have to keep in check there. So they have a really good offense. They have you know, comparable weapons. I wouldn't say they have a tight end that's blows you away, but overall they have solid weapons and an average offensive line. So if the Eagles D line can get some pressure on Tua, I think that will certainly help. But it's I don't know. They're a good team, and it just seems like a really lopsided matchup. If the D line can't dominate for four quarters.
Yeah, it is an impressive offense. Mike McDaniels, their head coach, is like offensive mastermind, Kyle Shanahan disciple. So he's a creative guy. They use a lot of motion. They're like a supercharged offense. Obviously at wide receiver, ton of speed, running backs. They got it in spades. Now I do think like Raheem Mostert's like he's got game breaking speed. I don't find him to be like some amazing, like elusive guy. So if he can get to the second level or like even Jeff Wilson, they are like dangerous, but like they don't strike me as like, wow, these guys are just like unbreakable. Like they're not the most physical runners. And that was something Sean Desai talked about. Like he thinks the physicality is that's something that can help counteract all of this like speed and athleticism. So hopefully the Eagles defensive line can be that first line of defense to contain these big runs that they so often break. Like if you watch that Broncos game where they put up 70, it was like, oh wow, there goes another 60-yard touchdown run. Which I do wonder, like, how, I'm not saying this would take away their like Sterling offensive reputation, but I do wonder, like, if we could neutralize that a little bit, what it would show. I'm sure everything would still look quite good, but yeah, certainly Tyreek Hill and Waddle are like the big guys you got to keep an eye on and keep them in check. You mentioned Tua, he gets a ball out quickly, which, you know, if he's doing that against the rest of the league, I feel like he's gonna turn that notch up even a little bit higher against the Eagles. So hopefully, like, I have seen, like, I feel encouraged by what Sean Desai has done and his game plans. Like, he is doing a pretty good job considering the amount of injuries that are popping up throughout the course of the season. Like, every week here, every week is a new secondary. They haven't had all of their starters. And even if you take out Maddox, like, going forward and replacing him as a starter, they haven't had a returning group. Every week they're losing a guy and having to have a new starter. So I think it's a tall task for Desai, but I'm still hopeful that he can you know, keep them in check, keep this as a competitive game. Their offensive line, they're going to be without Teron Armstead, their star left tackle, former Saint, I believe. So otherwise, their offensive line, like, can be had. I'm not saying they're bad. I also feel like I've said this every week so far. The Eagles continue to go up against lines who are down a starter to last week, Elijah Vera Tucker. And I'm still left feeling that the defensive line who's still performing at a high level is still not getting everything they can or should be on paper. Like, it still feels like these offensive lines they go up against are still, like, hitting above average against the Eagles. And that's even with the Eagles being able to get to the quarterback and play well at the line.
Yeah, it felt a little bit like in the Jets game that the Jets were getting more pressure on Jalen, and Jalen was unable to do things more than the Eagles D-line has taken advantage of opposing banged up offensive lines. But it could be, you know, hyper vigilance or hyper awareness.
That's
because
exactly what it is.
Yeah,
it's
so
like more painful for us to go through a bad offensive play than it is joyful to see the defense go three and out.
Because always looking at the stats at the end of the game, it's like the Eagles defense got like 3-4 sacks. It's like, well, that's a pretty nice day. And the Eagles were sacked like 3-4 times. It's like, oh, that makes sense. But why does it feel like we gave up more pressure than we gave? The other side of the Dolphins matchup, which makes this a million times more interesting to me. We talked about, you know, their weapons and how explosive they are. They're 5-1, but all their wins are mostly against like the bottom of the league. They beat the Chargers week one in a tight game, and the Chargers aren't, you know, bottom, but
it was a close game.
36-34. They narrowly beat New England on the road, only scoring 24. They won 24-17 in that. They killed the Broncos at home. They beat the Giants and the Panthers at home, and the Giants and the, you know, the Panthers are the worst team in the league. So they haven't beaten an elite team yet. They lost, their one loss was on the road against division rival Buffalo, and they gave up 48 points and they only scored 20. So, you know, they're too low scoring games this year. They won scoring 24 and they lost scoring 20, so they're still gonna put up 20-ish points, but this is another test for them on the road to see if they can sustain the massive success that they've had against bad teams. Now, to their credit, they've beat up on the teams they should beat up on, and the Eagles at times have narrowly escaped with wins. So
I was gonna, I like this exercise, and I brought the Eagles because I know we go through it each week, we talk about it, but I think looking at it on a list, like, I feel like you could say the same exact thing about the Eagles, who have the same record now. Like, they beat the Patriots 25-20, they beat the Vikings 34-28. Okay, those two teams are fine. They beat the Buccaneers 25-11. Okay, that's quality. They beat the Commanders in overtime, barely. They beat the Rams 23-14. Okay, that's like quality. And then they lose to the Jets. Womp womp. So, like, I feel like around the league, there's not too many like quality statement wins in any given week. So yeah, it's an interesting exercise early in the year, trying to like dissect which wins are like more meaningful than the others, or like impressive from, an opponent's point of view. Obviously, it's impossible for us to do that about the Eagles, considering we're fans of them.
Yeah. So, other interesting tidbits: the Dolphins' defensive coordinator, Vic Fangio, former future Eagle defensive coordinator Vic Fangio, coming to town. Do you think he has any advantage?
He's going to be able to key fob into the facility.
That's not good.
The night before and steal all of Sean Desai's playbooks, I bet. Because they didn't take him out of the system.
Damn, that sucks.
I do think it's an interesting kind of like undertone of the game. Like, all right, this guy could have been the Eagles. He could have been on the other sideline if it wasn't for Gannon. The other one that's kind of like that is like the Tua versus Jalen. You know, if Tua didn't boot Jalen out of Alabama, would he have been the Eagles' current quarterback? So there's like a ton of sliding door personal matchups here, even outside of the actual field. Christian Wilkins, defensive tackle, he's good. I think I was going through the Dolphins defense, and they have like a lot of names, and their defense has been like underperforming this year. So I'm hoping that this doesn't mean they're like due for a good defensive game. But they got like a lot of names.
Jalen Duke Ramsey, Riley.
Yeah, Duke Riley. We'll start at the top, Duke Riley. Jalen Ramsey, star cornerback in the league. He's on IR. He did have his window activated, but McDaniel's already said that like he's not going to be playing this week. So thankfully the Eagles won't have to worry about that. He's coming back from a meniscus injury. But his cornerback mate, when healthy, Xavien Howard, he was limited early in the week with a knee injury. So he didn't practice Wednesday. He practiced today. I think that means he's in line to play. So I don't know if he travels or if we'll get Brown or Smith, but he's a really good cornerback, and they're lucky they only have to face one of them because their depth isn't as good. It kind of drops off from there. But their defensive tackle, I mentioned Wilkins. Their defensive line, they got Jalen Phillips, who's like a young ascending talent in the league. They also have Emmanuel Ogba, Bradley Chubb, who they got from the Broncos last year and gave a new contract to. Andrew Van Ginkle, he's another guy. He's got a funny name. There's also a Ginkle on the Diamondbacks, so, right? Their setup guy. So they got some names.
Eli Apple?
Yeah, Eli Apple. He's been filling in for Jalen Ramsey. I always get, like, He is such a prominent name, but it's not because of his play. He's like the national version of Jalen Mills, it seems like. Like he chirps after every play. He just like publicly, like on the field, on Twitter, just talking trash
Yeah, he
relentlessly.
does very well or he does very bad.
David Long, I think he was with the Titans recently. He's a good linebacker, so I see the talent, and then I see what Vic Fangio. So there's a lot of potential in this defense, and so far just hasn't really came to fruition just yet, but that doesn't mean it can on Sunday.
This game gives me like comps to the Panthers game in the Super Bowl year. Like that was on the
Wow,
road.
the Thursday night football game, huh?
That was Thursday night.
Well, which Super
It
Bowl,
was
I
prime
guess. The one they
the
won or
Super Bowl,
lost.
the 2017 Super Bowl year.
Yeah. That was Thursday night football against Cam?
I thought it was
Nigel
like
Bradham
Sunday night.
game?
What?
The Nigel Bradham game.
Yeah,
Yeah, that was Thursday night football.
that like the Panthers were another top team in the league. It was like these two big teams squaring off, and at the time it was like, are the Eagles legit? If they win this game, they're legitimate. So I think if they win this game, they'll be on the right track. I think it'll be definitely difficult, and they have harder games ahead. But it seems like a heat, not a heat check, but like a reality check type game. Like, how do they,
The
yeah,
opposite
how do
of
they,
heat
how do they stack up? So,
coming out of this Jets game, the Eagles just have a heat check.
definitely not a heat check. Do you have anything else on the game?
Not that we won't. Anything else we'll get into in the predictions, I think.
All right. Eagles are 2.5 home favorites, so basically a pick 'em, even. And we'll get into predictions. I think you go first this time.
All right. Okay. First prediction here. I think DeAndre Swift has a bounce back game and gets back to triple digits as far as rushing yards go. And he gets a touchdown. So I'm really expecting the tides to turn after, even though he did have a touchdown last week, he did have that fumble. He didn't really have a productive day rushing the ball. He was kind of stuffed a lot at the line. I do think I don't think the Eagles will come out rushing the ball the whole game. Like, I don't think they'll lean on it heavily, but I do think they come out in like their first drive and like they try to establish the run. And I think that makes sense against a really explosive offense to kind of shrink the game a little bit, the amount of possessions, because I don't think the Eagles will win in like a firefight. I think if they can kind of play a little bit of ball control and get their offensive line moving, and as long as Lane Johnson is ready to go, I think that would be like a nice way to open it up, especially at home on Sunday Night Football, to kind of have like a statement drive where they're like, yeah, maybe this got away from us, but like, don't forget, we can do this whenever we want, as long as we're not behind too much.
Yeah, I have a similar prediction that the Eagles and Jalen specifically go back to focusing on the run. They kind of got away from it against the Jets. Give Jalen a rushing touchdown and Swift two rushing touchdowns.
Okay.
So a lot of their touchdowns will be on the ground.
All right, I'll keep this next one short. It'll sound crazy when I say it, but Julio Jones gets a touchdown.
Wow. So you think I'll see
I think
some
he'll get
snap.
like a little feature, like
Okay.
Watkins
I
out.
like that. I like that.
I could see them go in the red zone and be like, all right, listen, you don't even know, I don't even think you need to know the play here. Like, we're coming your way.
Yep.
So,
His redemption from the divisional round in 2017.
yeah, same corner.
2018, technically. Yeah. I'll continue with the passing. It's weird, we're sort of on the same wavelength thematically. AJ Brown continues his 125 yard streak. I believe he had three games in a row, so this would be four. That might be like an NFL record, something like that. Give him 9 catches, 135 yards, and a touchdown.
Yeah, I mean, he's been getting his, so I could see it. All right, my third and final here. I'm gonna go back to Darius Slay. I think in his return, he keeps Tyreek Hill to under 100 yards. And I don't think there's many receivers where you can say, like, that is a job well done. But I think against Tyreek Hill, that is a job well done if he can keep it him to that, because he's, like, on pace for, like 2,600 yards. I think he's, like, 100 yards plus more than what A.J. Brown has. So he is.
Yeah, it's unreal how many yards he has.
He's putting up monster numbers. Yeah.
My third prediction is kind of similar. In trying to contain Hill, whether successfully or not, we'll see. Waddle goes off and has 11 catches, 140 yards, and a touchdown. So big Waddle game, I think, and all the hype going into containing Hill.
Gotcha. Are you assuming that secondary, who are the safeties? Is it Brown and Edmonds?
I guess it'll have to be. Mecky Gardner? Mekhi Gardner? I don't know how to say his name.
I think it's Mekhi.
Okay.
Could be wrong. And so obviously they'll have Slay and Bradbury, but at nickel, you think it is Josiah Scott?
I wouldn't be surprised. Him or
Ricks, maybe?
Ricks, yeah.
Coming back from an injury. Yeah, dicey, but I'm glad they got Slay back. So my player of the game, we didn't really talk about him too much, but we did at the front, and that's Lane Johnson. I think
another lineman, wasn't it? Jason Kelce last week for you? Yeah.
So yeah, I think, like, you know, people have rightfully pointed out the success the Eagles have when he's in the lineup versus when he's out of the lineup. I think even if he's not 100%, the absence of Jack Driscoll will be felt. I do think him containing one of the linebackers or edge rushers, I trust him if he's healthy, that he'll be as good enough as, like, excellent. And I think he could really bring, like, a calming presence of, like, all right, this could be like a circle of the wagons game. Like, it doesn't need to be pretty, but as long as they got, like, their star guys, I think this could be a nice bounce back game, even if it's not pretty. And, like, at points it could be painful to watch if, you know, Tua is lighting us up at certain points.
Yeah. It's funny. He's like a player that could be player of the game any week.
Very true.
My player of the game, not surprising, DeAndre Swift. I have him with 2 touchdowns. Lane Johnson obviously is part of that, along with the rest of the line. And the run game, controlling the clock and all that, I think DeAndre Swift, give him a big game.
Okay. I'm a little nervous that we're both leaning optimistic here. I wasn't expecting both of us, and maybe
this we have is the end of it. We don't have the score predictions yet.
The line as it is right now, Eagles 2.5-point favorites at home. So you mentioned that's slightly favoring the Dolphins, factoring the 3 points. I was really on the fence here. I think I'm gonna give the Eagles benefit of the doubt here, because Sunday Night Football at home, the Kelly Green, this is like a team that I think is looking to bounce back in a big way. So I think it's going to be a close one. Give me Eagles 28, Dolphins 24.
I also have the Eagles scoring 28. However, I have the Dolphins scoring 35. I have it as a loss. By a touchdown, unfortunately. So
okay, well, you bounce it out there at the end. So
yeah. Hello. All right. Well, we'll be back after the game next week. For Mike, I'm Ian. Thanks for listening.
Right under the bat.